it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host, and are we lucky today? We have the one, the only, Dr. Aaron Kack joining us. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, well, I'm good. I'm wet today. We're recording on Tuesday, which I think has floated into the weekend by now because everybody's in a water cooler by this point. And also joining us for the first time, his inaugural visit to the Weekend Water Cooler is our city desk man, Victor Lewis.
Yes. Hey, Gene.
Victor, I did some research on you, and I discovered to my, what's the word I want?
Chagrin?
Surprise and delight that you and I have something very important in common, and it's not facial hair.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know that was close, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I did not realize it until I did this very difficult to nail down research that you graduated from the J School as I did, the UNC School of Journalism.
I didn't
Is that
know
true,
that
or is that just a false
school person?
Is that
well?
Just a false brag on the WCHL website?
Oh yeah, that's just me putting falsehoods out into
just
the world.
You put
yes,
it,
yes, I did
putting it out there.
The
yes,
school.
You did. And you did which sequence did you? When did you graduate? Because they changed some things after I graduated.
I graduated right at the transition from JOMC to MEJO.
Okay, to
so,
MEJO.
Yeah, media and journalism. Which I always like journalism and mass communication a little better, but that's just me.
Yeah,
we all hate
getting
change.
An eye roll from the other guy over there.
Yeah. I did not roll my eyes externally.
It was implied.
It was implied.
So I guess that was about 2.5 years ago-ish.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah, I took the long way around, but I got there.
Yeah, well, not as long as I did. I bet. I imagine. Imagine. I went back to college 15 years after I graduated from high school. I went initially for a minute to Emerson College in Boston and then returned to Hartford and married this guy. I married some guy.
Some dude.
And we relocated to North Carolina and had our kids And so after...
And some people will do anything to get out of Boston.
Honest to God, it's really true. It was summer. It was hot. It was really, really hot. Anyway. So I went back when I had a kid in diapers. And of course, by that point, it was my own money. So then I was a really, really good student, and I burned it at both ends and finished in 3 years. Because when it's your own money, you can do 21 hours a semester and really
got things to take care of.
Tear it up, right? Yeah. So I mean, I really loved it. I was at a place in my life where I was really ready for doing that, and really loved it. So
it was time for me to do it. I was really excited to be going to school and learning all sorts of stuff. It's nice to have people put you in your place. And I kind of end up talking about that with interns that we have working here. I feel like everyone that thinks that they know or knows that they think that they're good at writing goes through a few phases. And I find a lot of people are just caught in the Kanye West phase of just, I am the best at this. I am the smartest.
Right.
Behold my flowery eloquence. Look at it. Look upon my words. And
yeah, be humble before me.
And it was nice to have that beaten out of me by Paul O'Connor and friends. Child, what are you doing? Stop.
You know, I went through some boxes and boxes of stuff to actually just to toss it. But what I did, which was smart, is I went through a lot of my old papers and notebooks and stuff. And it's a good thing I went through them because in those days when you submitted a paper, you had your name on it. And incredibly, on a lot of exams and stuff, Social Security number.
Yep.
And it's a good thing I went through all this stuff and, you know, tore off the cover sheet and whatever had the identifying information. But, of course, I did, as you would do, I went through and read a lot of this stuff. And a lot of these were assignments in reporting class and editorial writing and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is great. This is going to be a real trip down memory lane.
That was actually a common practice, I think, for a long time. When I was in college, we put our Social Security numbers on our papers instead of our names. As a way to anonymize the grading.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then the professor would grade the paper, and then afterwards they would match it up with the names. Yeah, but
interesting.
We were so young and naive.
Yeah, really. I'm looking at this stuff and I'm going, oh my God, we were so naive. Everybody was naive about that in those days. But I'm reading these papers that I wrote that I thought, oh, you know, I got a B plus on this. Mm-hmm. I got an A on this. It was terrible. I mean, some of it was just terrible. But not when I got to, you know, by the end of journalism school, it wasn't terrible.
No, it's not.
It might not have been as interesting as I thought it should have been sometimes.
Oh, story of my life.
But man, structure. And, you know how to tell a story. After you get out of there, they just beat it into you, beat it out of you, whatever it is.
Yeah, you definitely get all the technical skills that you need in order to be able to tell a story.
And you can spell.
Yeah.
Or you don't graduate.
And make sure that you know all the proper nouns.
Yeah, spelling and grammar slammer. That's a good one. That's a good one. It keeps me busy on Facebook straightening out everybody on the internet about
they're wrong
affect
and, they need
and effect
to
and all these things. Yeah, so
it's good that you spend your time on Facebook correcting people's grammar, because otherwise you'd have to spend your time correcting people's politics, and that's just a very bad road to go.
Well, what a useless enterprise that is. Yeah. No left. just saying. So, Victor, you were going to tell us a story about folk heroes. You've been thinking about folk heroes lately.
I have been thinking about folk heroes.
Number one hero of Aaron Katz.
Yeah. There's just no segue into this one. So
There is no way to lean. I'm just going to lean right into it.
All right.
And that's fine. I have been thinking a lot about folk heroes lately because I've got a pretty obvious favorite folk hero, like an American folk hero, I guess, is what it needs to be limited to, American folk heroes. Well, I think for our purposes today, American folk heroes work the best because there's a lot that are criminals. Like, we romanticize a lot of criminals. There's lots of Bonnie and Clydes.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of John Dillingers, people that we look at and they were not even Robin Hooding it, not even stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, just stealing. Just
and
good old stealing
it.
In the days when if you robbed a bank, as long as you weren't there when the cops got there, you're probably fine. So
yeah, good times, right?
Woo, good old bank robbing.
Or trains.
Yeah. The much more difficult pursuit. But I've been thinking about folk heroes who didn't rob stuff, who didn't do crimes. And it's hard to just get them off the dome. Like, we got Paul Bunyan, who is famous for being real big, eating a lot of pancakes and chopping down a lot of trees. That's cool. There's John Henry, the man who defeated steampunk. I mean, that's fine as well, just nailing in railroad spikes. But I think my favorite folk hero, by far, is Johnny Appleseed.
Johnny Appleseed.
He's up there for me, too.
I love the entire concept of Johnny Appleseed. A man who is a folk hero for it's in his name.
Precisely because
for walking around planting trees. And that's the romanticized version.
Right.
Is that he was just walking around. In fact, he tended nurseries. He founded and tended nurseries, but he was doing it for towns and people and farmers. He would grow some saplings, teach them how to take care of the fruit trees, and then leave and go do it somewhere else.
And why did he do that? Do we know really why?
So he was very religious, is an answer to that question. And he was big into the idea of spreading the best of God's creation around.
Okay.
So he... Yeah.
This actually is a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He is a real man.
Even if in religious documents, apples represented temptation. He wasn't spreading temptation.
I didn't even think about that.
Well, I mean, the apple spreading temptation is a myth. In the original story, it just says fruit. We've turned it into
That's
apple.
True. Yeah. That's true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Apple, in
I
fact, represents life or something.
That's a good point.
Or something.
Yeah.
But
well, that's a good point,
too. He is a good one, yeah.
He probably was America's first organic farmer. Right?
I mean,
I feel like it was mostly organic.
I was going to say, really, like, there was point at which
it
I think,
to
like,
be organic.
I mean, it's
the,
about
America's
sustainability.
First non-organic farmer is the.
Oh man.
Well, I mean,
for.
It's about sustainability, though. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's farming. It's good for the land to have healthy apple trees. I mean, where I grew up in Connecticut, there were actually, you know, it's suburban Hartford, but there actually were enormous numbers of apple trees and farmers out there who you know made their way with their apple trees.
And oh, yeah.
So when we never cut apples from a grocery store. You went over to so-and-so's farm and you'd go get apples that way. Yeah.
We had that in Michigan growing up. My grandparents had an apple tree in their backyard. The apples that grew on the tree were not good, but it was still really nice to have an apple tree in the backyard. Up the road was Big John's Cider Mill. I think Uncle John's Cider Mill.
Right.
Big Uncle John's.
Uncle John's Cider Mill. And I think there was another competing orchard that you would go up to, especially during the fall, obviously harvest season, and there would be apple pickings and cider for sale. And Halloween was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apple orchard.
They'd commercialized it. So you go there and you pay money to go in with your barrel.
They modernized Johnny Appleseed into Big John.
Big John.
Big John or Uncle John. Or
all those small apple farmers are around going, Big John is trying to take us over.
I actually now have no further need for the Common Era as well. It's just after organic and before organic, whenever produce started to
back
have
in that
to be
BO
labeled.
Era, there was just not a whole lot of fun.
And on that note, we're going to just take a pause here because everybody needs it from hearing this compelling story from Victor Lewis, partly narrated by Dr. Aaron Keck here on the Weekend Water Cooler. It's brought to you by Big John, Big John's Apples. Big John's. Oh, my goodness gracious. We've just lost at least three sponsors just by talking about that.
And probably gained two more.
Right. So we're going to be back after our break. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Dr. Lewis, and now we're going to move on away from Big John because, you know, we have to. It's a family show, and we're going to move on and talk about music, and I'm going to tell you this little story that my brother sent an email out to the four of us siblings saying that he had played a couple of songs for his daughter, and his daughter, who is my namesake and is about to be 21 years old and will be a senior in college somehow this coming fall, which just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't know how that happened. So what happened is he played this music for her, and she thought it was just really not that good, just not impressed. This was The Doors, like L.A. Woman, Light My Fire, you know, and like our Riders on the Storm, and she thought it was meh. We wanted to know if maybe Johnny Appleseed hit her in the head with a pot or something. She had sustained a substantial injury because that didn't make sense to us at all. So you're a kid, so you know what are the kids thinking today for music? So, first of all,
you're a kid. What do the kids think about music?
What's with kids today?
The Doors are question. Not all that out of bag of chips. I want to be clear.
Can we go back and talk about the baby boomer ripping on the musical taste of these kids today? When back in 1967, Doors music did not sell nearly as many copies as the Ballad of the Green Berets.
That's exactly true.
So musical taste have been crap for a long,
that
long time.
That is exactly true, but yeah. I would point out that that was my parents buying that stuff.
Claim no responsibility.
I was nine. I mean, you know, I wasn't buying a lot of records in 1967.
Yeah.
But I was probably buying records that were made in 1967 in 1973.
Okay. I retract my Ballad of the Green. Ballad of the Green Berets, and I will replace it with Yummy, 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 I've Got Love in My Tummy by the Ohio Express.
That was a good song, though.
I'm going to try really hard to remember.
What about the Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini? I had that bikini.
I did, too.
I could rock a bikini when I had a bikini, but... see, when you get older and more sensible, you realize that once you can't rock the bikini, you need to stop wearing them.
Yeah.
This is where some women don't.
That's why the Clash changed to that lyric.
Yeah. So what are you listening to these days? I guess is. So do you have an alarm on your phone that has a song?
I do.
Or is it,
but
you know, just beep,
it's
beep,
music
beep,
it's from a television show that I watch a lot of called Steven Universe. Like my, I make my phones with themes, and my phone is currently themed with Steven Universe. But the music in Steven is fantastic. Like, it's all composed by some people that work on the show, and it's great. It's actually kind of reminiscent of a band called Tennyson that I really enjoy. I like Tennyson a lot. It's almost orchestral video game bleep bloop music is a weird way to describe it. It's jazzy, it's classical at times. I like things that mash a lot of genres. I'm also a big album listener. Mm-hmm. That's why I was ready to just poop all over the doors, because I do.
My cat does the same thing.
Yeah, mine too.
Cats.
First they scratch it, then they poop on it, yeah.
Because I do enjoy Doors music, but I don't think I've ever listened to a Doors album and enjoyed it front to back. I don't think I've ever sat down and just every moment of that was significant. It's
very much
a hit band that's carried with the charisma of Jim Morrison. Although Peace Frog is a jam, I will forever defend Peace Frog as the eminent jam of the Doors.
Okay.
I went through, well, more like music that the kids are listening to these days, which, again, I'm not the person to ask about this. The Arctic Monkeys' new album, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino. I have been obsessed with that for the past couple weeks. I'm finally getting out of – it's a fantastic album. It's perfect for me. It's weird. It's a concept album based on a fictional hotel and casino on the moon. And it's told through a rotating series of narratives from a lounge singer to people working there to folks visiting to politicians. It's just
brilliant.
It's nuts.
It's a brilliant concept.
There's so much happening in that album all the time. There's not a single hook or chorus on it ever.
Wow.
It's just poetry flowing from one thing to the next. And as you listen to it, you keep uncovering stuff that's happening in the background. Like, occasionally there's just a sneaky theremin that you didn't notice until 2 minutes into the song, or some weird riff that's being repeated from something. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino is excellent. It's so good, in fact, that I went to Target and bought a CD because I already have it on a record.
Oh, my.
I went to Target and bought a CD and gave it to Ron Stutz so he can listen to it this weekend.
And gave it to Ron Stutz?
I did.
What did he say?
He hasn't listened to it yet.
Oh, he hasn't listened to it yet? Okay.
He's going to listen to it soon. And I look forward to talking with him about
it. He's reserving judgment.
Because I would like to see what Ron has to say about a moon-based casino concept album that comes across like space lounge music from Vegas.
Well, let me tell you something. I think it takes some confidence to buy a piece of music and give it to Ron Stutz.
Yeah. I'm fine with not seeing it
again. I would not be up to that. First of all, he would look at me and say, are you kidding me? I've listened to that 100 times.
I would. You know. I would bet that he has not listened to Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino for this.
And I love showing Ron new music. There's a producer that I really enjoy. His name is Gallimachus. And he sampled an old soul song, so old. And I knew that Ron would know what it was.
Uh-huh.
So I went into the studio and asked Ron if I could show him something, and I pulled it up and I let him listen to it, and it was wonderful to see Ron Stutz vibing with a mood-setting DJ sampling soul music in this like Latin flip style. Oh my goodness.
My goodness.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in that.
There's a lot going on in
Yeah. Well, see that's so much more. I've never heard of any of this stuff that you're talking about. I'm just totally out of that. And that sounds so cool.
There's lots of cool stuff.
I mean, there's like, this is one of the reasons that I always loved, you know, Pink Floyd and specifically, of course, Dark Side of the Moon, is that for me and for anybody who listens to Pink Floyd enough, you can drop in anywhere in that album. I don't know why you would, but you could drop in anywhere in that album. And at the end of each song, you know what the next song is. You know what's coming. And that's what the album format, I think, was always meant to be. I mean,
flowing from one thing to the next. One cohesive work.
Exactly. And in fact, that's one thing that you lose on Pink Floyd albums when you have them on CD or you have them digitally, is that the way that one song literally goes into the next, it's interrupted because there's, you know, there's a break. There's a moment of silence between one and the next. And it does kind of, you know, poop on it. It's funny that you can't buy the music in one long chunk. I mean, why isn't that the case, I wonder?
I mean,
digitally,
it
seems like you could. But if you buy the album digitally, you're still going to get that, I think.
CDs don't have the skip in between. So if you burn a CD, that might have the skip.
Well,
and like the one
also,
that you actually
it
buy.
Could have the skip if it's a coding issue. If there's not made to be a transition in between songs, if they left half a second too much silence on either side of a track, you're going to get a full pause in between.
But, so I guess you could put it on your – boy, we're really getting in the weeds for – it's very nerdy right now, but I'm loving this. So you really – you could put it on your own computer digitally, and then you can edit it so that there – you can edit out that
– Oh, yeah, entirely.
That
sure.
Brief.
Yeah.
And it would take about 2 minutes if you really wanted to.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
And you know what else you can do in 2 minutes? You can take a quick break and let our sponsors talk to our listeners because they have so many interesting things to say. And, you know, just thinking about what's coming next is just so exciting that Aaron Keck and Victor Lewis here on the Weekend Water Cooler, you can't see this, but they're right on the edge of their seats. It's just breathtaking. It's so exciting. Yeah. So we're going to be back in just a moment. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back on the Weekend Water Cooler, and we're talking to Victor Lewis and Dr. Aaron Keck, and we're talking about books a little bit. You know, Aaron talks about books every week on his show.
That's true.
So you've got that book muscle. What do
flexed,
you do with that book
strong,
muscle?
Flex, yeah.
Strong, ready to turn a page.
I can lift spirits.
I can tell you that my favorite book lately is a classic, one that I've read and reread now many, many times. It's The Monster at the End. There's a monster at the end of this book.
Oh, by Grover.
By Grover.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's a
lovable,
great one.
Furry old Grover.
Yeah.
It is the greatest book, I think. It is probably the most read book.
In the Bolduc household.
We have worn the ink
yes.
right off the pages. My grandson is absolutely deeply in love with that book and wants to read it over. And it's amazing to me how much he takes in about it. And what I love about this book and books like it is that it teaches the concept of turning the page and that something interesting and valuable is going to happen on the next page and that you can't wait to get to the end of the book and that this is your adventure is to get to the end of the book.
I do really appreciate good children's books because they are very insidious about the way that they teach things to kids who are reading. It's really fascinating to read and to think about how the book is accomplishing the teaching of what vocabulary or what skill and the really
and
good
story
ones do
structure
a fascinating
stuff,
job of
yeah.
it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
and
sneaking
it's,
vegetables into dinner.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that people think that, you know, if you, oh, you wrote a kid's book, so it's like, you know, what is it, 150 words? Well, you know, Dr. Seuss's books were never that many words.
Yeah.
And I bet you know a lot of those books and remember things structurally about them.
And a lot of the values that get inculcated into kids from reading those books, they stick with you. My professor, one of my graduate school advisors, taught an intro class to his students at Rutgers, Nature of Politics, and they focused on children's literature and children's movies. He showed the class Pinocchio. This was at Rutgers University.
Right.
300 person lecture hall, and they're all sitting there watching Pinocchio. And then afterwards, you talk about, okay, what are the values that we are teaching 4, 5, 6 year old kids that just sort of get absorbed and then you live your life theoretically according to those without even really questioning it. That's a fascinating angle, too.
Yeah. And who was it, the Washington Post, that stole that with scoring politicians with how many Pinocchios they give them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's classic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was a kid, I don't remember that much about particular books except Curious George, absolutely, hands down, in terms of books that were mine for me reading and me engaging in the story, it was Curious George. And I've realized in thinking about this a lot recently for obvious reasons about why that is. And the reason why that is, I believe, is that it wasn't just the book itself. It was that when I would get Curious George, it would be because my mother and I would go to the library And we would spend time at the library. And I have an older brother and sister. And this was something that only my mother and I did together, just us. Because this is when my brother and sister were they were of school age, and I was about 3 or 4, not ready for kindergarten yet. And my younger brother hadn't come along yet. And so I was like, you know, the only baby in the house. And for my mother, this was like, you know, I can't believe how easy this is. She had my brother and sister in rapid succession. They're less than a year apart. And to her, when I came along, she like felt like she knew what she was doing, and was totally confident in handling a kid. I'm sure I was the easiest baby in the world as well.
Low maintenance.
Yeah.
And not the test baby either.
That's right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. She made all those mistakes on my brother and, you know, put his diaper on his head and whatever you do.
Hmm.
And, I mean, it was the outing and the event and all of that, and not just Curious George. But, of course, I remember her reading the book and all that stuff. And, of course, you know, it was like we would go back and renew it because you would do that, right? You don't call the library and say, we're keeping it another week. You make that, you know, a thing of we're going to check it out again for another 2 weeks and whatever. And I've often wondered, why didn't you just buy the book? But that's the whole point. That's the whole point.
It wasn't, you know, about making sure that you had Curious George. It was about making sure that everyone else in the neighborhood didn't have Curious George.
Those other kids will never find out what happens with the
George. No, they don't know about the George. Now, the other piece of storytelling history for me that comes to mind when I think of my childhood is my grandfather reading Rikki Tikki Tavi. And you know, when in Rikki Tikki Tavi, he tells part of the story, and he makes this sound that's like when the mongoose is around and all this, and he made this sound that I could never ever replicate. I could not be when he'd say Rikki Tikki Tavi. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But my grandfather was a school teacher.
Estimation of how it sounded?
Let's hit it approximately.
Yeah.
It was like Rikki Tikki. That probably sounds better on the radio.
It's in
person.
Not too bad.
It's like a clicking and sort of like a rattlesnake, and it was kind of scary and but it was exotic. It was an exotic sound that my grandfather could make.
Anthony Hopkins and sounds.
Yeah, very, very. Okay, Cherie. Oh, Clary.
Rikki Tikki Hopkins.
Right. No worries, Clary. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's scary. Now I'm scared of the book. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry that I ruined your childhood.
So is Rikki Tikki Tavi, is that part of the Jungle Book, or is that a different – is that a
– Yeah, I never read Rikki Tikki Tavi, and I'm confused every single time that someone brings that up. I have to re-remind myself that what they're describing is very different from the book that I remember growing up, which is Rikki Tikki Tembo. Do you all remember this?
No, I don't know.
Rikki Tikki Tembo, No Saw Rembo, Cherry Berry Bucci, Pit Perry Pembo has fallen into the well. And
it's catchy.
The person who knows that he has to go back and tell the townspeople that Rikki Tikki Tembo, No Saw Rembo, Cherry Berry Bucci, Pit Perry Pembo has fallen into the well. But it takes so long
to say the kid's name.
I think they are able ultimately to rescue.
Ain't nothing like old-timey fairy tales. And then child died because his parents were irresponsible.
I think in this particular version, the child
couldn't come
survives,
up with a nickname?
But it was real touch and go there.
Just
for
call
a minute.
Him Rikki.
How about Rikki? Rikki in the well.
But it's not the same thing as Rikki Tikki Tavi, and that's confusing to this day.
It's weird. I just have this cultural knowledge of Rikki Tikki Tavi. I couldn't tell you if it was a book. Part of me wants to say it's a song or a poem or a short story, a fable. I just know that he's a mongoose and there's a snake and the snake's going to hurt somebody and the mongoose is just like, nah, dog. And that's the only thing that I know.
See, I'm sure in the 60s there was a folk artist who wrote a song called Rikki Tikki Tavi.
Which I think I've heard. I think that's what I know it from.
That folk song was never a hit. I don't know that song.
Few folk songs are.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know, my siblings and their recollections of music, their waxy memories of the late 60s and early 70s are all about how all this music, you know, this music apparently single-handedly stopped the Vietnam War because it drove people to, it was like hypnosis, I guess.
Yeah, you had John Fogerty in the helicopter flying over the jungles and everyone just stopped.
That's right. That's pretty much how it went.
That's Forrest Gump you're thinking
of? That's a news account. That's a news account right there.
Yes. No, I mean, everyone in 1967 was listening to Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. I've got love in my tummy.
Yeah, like, right. As the helicopters flew,
you can't
sure.
fight a war when you've got love in your tummy, clearly.
You can't.
Yeah.
You know, like, what was the music of, you know, 1944?
Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B.
Well, there you go.
It was a lot. I think a lot of the music from World War II was glorifying the war, and a lot of the music of Vietnam was the popular music, that is, was anti-war or at least ambivalent towards it. And I think that probably did go a long way toward changing public opinion.
Well, there's no probably about that, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a back and forth thing too, right? I mean, the music, the protest music was popular because the war was unpopular, but the protest music also contributed, so it's kind of back and forth.
Yeah, and the protest music was about the reasons that the war was unpopular, which is that the government was lying about what was going on in the war and why we were there. So yeah, it does sound oddly familiar. Yeah. I'm going to have to conjure up what
there's also the case with every single previous war as well, including the good ones.
The so-called good ones.
Even World War II, which was the kind of the epitome of the good war.
That's true. It's exactly true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is getting depressing. So we're going to come back and we're going to be undepressed. We're going to talk about something cheery and chippy with Victor Lewis and Dr. Aaron Keck. And we're going to just send you on your way for the rest of the weekend here from the water cooler with something positive, something cheerful. We can't wait to find out what it is. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And speaking of rolling, we're welcome to the weekend water cooler for our final moments. Thank goodness we've arrived. Aaron was just cracking us up with something we can't even begin
Man,
to
all
explain.
The funniest stuff happens between the commercial breaks.
Yeah, I mean,
you're listening out there, you are just going to have to take our word for it. The last 2 minutes were funny.
Just funny, huh? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we were cheering up.
Yeah, we laughed.
We were talking about cheese at the cops and somehow not even the crackers. I mean, I don't even know what happened there. You just had to be there.
Yeah.
So listen, this coming week is Independence Day. And let me tell you my favorite 4th of July story. Well, one of my favorite 4th of July stories. When I worked for what used to be a local bank, Central Carolina Bank, I worked in the marketing department. And you know when you pull up to the drive-up window and there's a sign that says, "We'll be closed on Tuesday, September 3rd for Labor Day."
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of our responsibilities was to make those signs each year. And so, well, somebody else who worked in that department did that. And she came in with the signs, and we were going to send them out to the branches.
Hang on, I'm writing something down.
He's writing down his prediction of what it is I'm going to say.
Go for it.
And so the person who was responsible for these signs had all these 65 or so sets of signs that said, "We'll be closed on Tuesday, July 4th for 4th of July." Is that what it says?
No. My guess was that the person who was making the signs was asking what day is the 4th of July.
Oh, that's so close.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? She figured that out by herself.
That's good.
Though.
That's good.
But
yeah.
She said, "Yeah, we'll be closed Tuesday, July 4th for 4th of July." And I said, you know, I don't know. I would say we're closed for Independence Day if you're, you know, just because of how silly that looks to see seeing the words arranged in that manner looked completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I'm
fairness, how many signs exist saying May 5th is Cinco de Mayo?
That's a good point.
So it's the same thing.
Yeah, but you don't close a bank for Cinco de Mayo. You just
go
out after work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things were real in Puebla.
Hey, that's a good point.
That's true.
Okay.
So what is Central Carolina Bank now?
Central Carolina Bank was absorbed into the Borg of SunTrust.
Oh, it's SunTrust now.
Yes.
See, I've had an account at First Union, Wachovia, and Wells Fargo right. without ever changing a thing.
Great. That's right. You've been you feel like you've probably just been around the world, and now are back with your checking account.
Yeah.
Don't you have access to a credit union?
Oh, I do. I've got I've got an account at Coastal now that I actually use, but I still have the.
Woo.
No, I'm on it.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Come on, man.
Took a while.
Yeah. Smash the patriarchy. I just, they don't, Wells Fargo doesn't sponsor anything on WCHL.
Not anymore.
Yeah, not after this.
Themselves.
They could just go sponsor them.
Refounded today.
That's right.
I will say the day that I realized that Wells Fargo's slogan was a pun was a fun day for me. This Wells Fargo slogan is "We'll go far," which is "Well Fargo." It's name in
and
slogan
I know, and you
form.
Said to yourself, you know, some guy in a corner office with a boat.
You were also just missing the second part of it, though. We'll go far, comma, with your money.
With your money. Commas.
Well, they dropped that part.
Yeah. See, commas, they dropped.
It didn't test well.
They didn't have
didn't
space. Well. Yeah, they didn't have space.
That is one of the better slogans, though, in terms of just reiterating the name of the company and just rearranging the letters to spell a message. It's great.
And now Wells Fargo is in a campaign about trust.
Yeah.
This is their new thing, which just hilarious
to
me.
We did bad, but... And
I mean, Facebook, same thing. Have you seen their ads now?
Oh, yeah, man.
Remember when Facebook was good, then remember when it was bad. We can make it good again.
We can make
Trust
it good
us,
again.
Facebook.
Yeah. That's
we're
going
to make it the way it should
it.
Be. Talking to your friends, just like you always like. Just like those
putting
awful
up pictures of your
Ajit
grandma.
Pie. Just, you can always do the same thing on the internet you've been doing. You can look at cat pictures. Yes, I know, Ajit. Please stop.
Yes. Well, you know that thing about... You know, you take your phone out of your pocket and you have more computing power in your pocket on your smartphone than all of Mission Control had when they sent people to the moon.
Oh, multiple times over.
And more importantly, brought them back from the moon alive. And
you're using it to look at cat pictures.
And what are you doing with it? You're looking at cat videos. And I'm going, that's right. I am. I'm looking at cat videos from Australia. So
it's the modern age.
Yeah,
that's right. That's the zen of my smartphone.
And it's cool because in Australia, cats go the other way around.
They do. You know, when they chase their tails, they go counterclockwise. Yep. I don't think people know that. Now, Aaron doesn't let his cats out.
No, we've got two very indoor cats who I'm very, and Brad is too, very protective of them and the indoors. We've got an airlock, basically, which is our garage.
Wait,
we open the garage.
Do they want to go out? Do they seek
not really,
to escape?
No,
they, really
no, they
don't
really try. We go into the garage. We turn the car off. We close the garage. And only then can we open the door to the house. It's very much an international space station kind of thing with making sure
policy,
that the cats
though.
Don't
they're
get out.
Escape.
Excellent procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always get a little bit worried when friends come over because they're opening the front door and
they
then there's
know
no
the
buffer zone.
They don't know the
there's
procedure.
No buffer zone.
Yeah. I know, and they're going, you're going, what are you doing? You're just walking right in the house. And they're going.
But they have no option because the garage is closed. So we know that this is going to happen. But when they do, it's still like, there's no buffer.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
well, on that note.
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to have to make our exit. I can't believe it, but, you know. Time passes. It happens.
It does.
So, you know, we're going to keep an eye on your garage, and I won't. I'm going to be worried about this now that the cats might get out.
I'm going to be worried about the fact that you're watching my garage.
That you're watching my garage, right? Well, listen, you all are going to be away for a couple of days, and you know, we probably should just shut down all of Chapel Hill while you're gone. But you know, I guess we won't. And
it's up to you.
I'll expect a happy report when you return from your independence vacation. And thanks for joining me on the Weekend Water
Cooler.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gene.
All right. Thank you. And y'all have a great weekend and a wonderful Independence Week.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.